You are Locked On Marlins, your daily podcast on the Miami Marlins. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is a Locked On Marlins, your go-to podcast on all things Miami Marlins. As always, I'm your host, Aram Layton. I'm the founder of JustBaseball.com, as well as a longtime Marlins writer. And in today's episode, we're going to recap what was a phenomenal four-game series for the Marlins. They did drop the finale, which was a 12 p.m. game, which honestly does not feel like it was that long ago, but as I record this at 12 a.m., it was a long time ago, and the Marlins just didn't have it today, and that's okay, because they were able to somehow, shorthandedly, in terms of their bullpen depth and availability of arms, they were able to take 3 out of 4 from the LA Dodgers, the defending champions, who had won 9 straight coming into this. So it's not like they were really, really scuffling. They'd gotten no hit, and then they won 9 straight, and then the Marlins took care of business, beating them 3 out of 4 times, and it makes it hurt a little bit more when you remember now the loss to the Braves in that series finale, because they could have easily just won 4 of their last 5, but it is what it is, and the Marlins will get another crack at the Braves in a 3-game set before the All-Star break, which should be interesting. I think the Marlins are going to come in pretty amped, looking for revenge, and probably feeling pretty good after taking 3 out of 4 from the defending champs. The game today, I'll talk about briefly, and then we'll talk about the good games as well, where the Marlins, they had 1 run in the first, and we're thinking, okay, Jasko's yard off of Urias, which again was really impressive. A great swing left on left to lead off the ball game for the Marlins, but the thing with Jazz is he's been getting his hits. But he also has been striking out a lot, and there haven't been that many multi-hit games for him over the last 2 weeks or so. It's been more of running into that one baseball or picking up that one infield hit or whatever it may be, and then 2 or 3 punch-outs. That's really what it's been for him, and I like Jazz in the leadoff spot. I really do, and I think it's good for him, and especially with all the things that he brings to the table. But if he's going to go 1 for 4 with 3 Ks as often as he has, the Marlins may need to reevaluate their leadoff situation. I love the spark that he brings, but as I talked about in the past too, he's doing better in the 6-hole, albeit it's a small sample size and there's some other components that go into it. But I would say that it might be worth considering if he continues on this high strikeout trend and only picking up that one hit, and it's generally an extra base hit. So if that's the kind of approach he's going to have right now, maybe you want to force him into shaking out of it and get him more thinking contact-oriented at the leadoff spot. But it seems like that's not influencing him too much. And I do think at times we see him in situations where man on third, less than 2 outs, and I'd rather him just out of the gate, right, first pitch, be looking to just put the ball in play. He did have one good swing on a 2-strike pitch where he grounded one over to second base and brought the run in. But what I have not loved to see is it seems like he's like, okay, let me take my 2 big hacks and try to put it out of here, which is fine when there's nobody on or in different situations or a man on first. But if it's a man on third, less than 2 outs, just look to put the ball in play right away and get that run. I mean, if you're trailing by 2 and it's late in the game, maybe it's a different case or you feel really good, you have a good track record against that specific pitcher, there's some factors. I'm not trying to make a blanket statement here, but I do see that in those situations, he seems to take 2 big swings and then he'll try to shorten up with 2 strikes. But at that point, there's a lot of variables. The pitcher could execute a perfect pitch and beat you, which I saw happen a couple times. The umpire can make a bad call, which we also saw happen a few times with Jazz as well. So why leave it up to the umpire there? I would like to see a more contact-oriented approach earlier in the count. I'm cool with Jazz taking his swings. Take those big swings. He's doing damage. But take those in maybe a hitter's count or maybe just on the first pitch of the at-bat. I think that pitchers know that Jazz is trying to ambush them and he's getting pitched to accordingly. And that's part of the reason why there's been a little bit of a scuffle from him as of late. But what I want to talk about also as a guy that is not scuffling whatsoever is Garrett Cooper. Garrett Cooper is absolutely mashing at the plate. But this is what we expected from Cooper, not to hit 500 over his last 12 games, which he's actually hitting 485 with a 1514 OPS and 4 jacks. That's 16 for 33 over his last 12 games. That's otherworldly. But his overall numbers now, his OPS is towards the mid-800s, and that's like the low to mid-800s is what we would expect from Garrett Cooper. That's what he's always hovered around, and I thought that this would be a year where he makes that next step. It was a little bit of a rocky start. He did deal with some injuries, but now he's settling into being that guy. I mean, the offense is what you get from Garrett Cooper, not the defense or the base running, which was something else to see. It was quite interesting to watch that slide into home, which was brutal. The Marlins still ended up winning that game, so it could have been something that really hurt, but he should have scored pretty easily. Looked like he ran out of gas halfway to home from third and then just pulled off the worst slide I've ever seen in my life, and then he was not great defensively in the outfield. It is what it is. He's so valuable offensively, I don't care. I'll play him in center if I have to. It will be a disaster, but with what he's been able to provide offensively, I will do whatever it takes to put that guy in the lineup, and he has been a catalyst for this team over the last handful of games, and a big reason why they've been able to win games over the last six or seven. I know that they ended up losing 2 out of 3 to the Braves, but still played really well in that series. Overall, it's really been him and Aguilar getting hot. I mean, how awesome was that walk-off three-run shot? Great to see him finally go yard at home, and Aguilar settling back in for this team is huge because he was quietly scuffling for a little bit and just not hitting for as much power, but now over his last dozen games as well, 293, 341, 512 slash line, he is much more looking like himself, and that is the best news for the Marlins possible. So led by those two guys, that's who we expected to lead this offense, as well as Adam Duvall, who's always going to have his spurts, but overall has been doing really well in that same time span with an OPS over 1,000 and 3 jacks. So those three guys have been leading it for the Marlins, and it's been a great boost for them. The guys who have not been doing great for them are the two catchers, and I've talked about how brutal they've been as of late. Sandy Leon has the lowest qualified OPS in all of the National League. So that's not great. I know he's a backup catcher, but he's basically a second pitcher in the lineup at this point. And then you look at Jorge Alfaro. Yes, he had that huge home run in the eighth to help the Marlins win that game in the early part of the Dodgers series, but he is also 3 for his last 34 and does not look great at the plate whatsoever. He has made some improvements behind the dish. I thought he's looked better as of late there, and you just got to ride out Alfaro for the rest of the year at this point probably, but you do not need to ride Sandy Leon the rest of the way. And the fact that he is legitimately worse than many pitchers at this point offensively, I just can't watch this guy hit anymore. Like, please, I don't want to do it. I know that he's a good pitch caller, and what I don't care at this point. Look, it's great. It's great that you're a good pitch caller, and it's great that you're pretty solid behind the dish, but the Marlins are already offensively starved. And if you look at the numbers this year, NL versus AL, there's a huge disparity in terms of pitcher ERA in the NL versus the AL, and meaning that ERAs are way higher in the AL. And sure, there might be some better pitching in the National League and there's some other factors, but I also was talking to Mike Fiers about this on the Locked On MLB Prospects podcast a while back. And Mike Fiers was saying, there's something just so nice about pitching in the National League where you know that you're going to have a break at the back end of that lineup. Not only because the pitcher is going to come up and that's going to be a huge break for you, but because you can pitch around the eight hitter as well. But the Marlins, in their situation, nobody's pitching around Sandy Leon. Would you rather face Sandy Leon or Pablo Lopez? It's like a wash for me. I'm not even kidding. I'm not even trying to be hyperbolic. That's not even a joke. It's a toss-up for me, Sandy versus Pablo. And that's just crazy that that's even a thing. So the seven hitter is the guy that you can kind of pitch around to get to Sandy and then the pitcher. That's ridiculous. And you shouldn't have one third of your lineup essentially being null. That just can't happen. You're not going to be able to score runs that way. And I know Sandy's not playing every single day, but he's still playing a pretty decent deal. And it's not like Alfaro is Johnny Bench out there either. So the Marlins get literally nothing. There's no team in baseball that gets less production offensively from the catching position. And I know that it's hard to find good hitting catchers, but you have by far the worst offensive production from your catching position. You probably should look to upgrade at least the backup spot. If the Marlins had like what they had from Francisco Cervelli, as I always say, for the first couple weeks before he unfortunately went down, I think it would be a much different look now. Not only from what you get in terms of the times you start the backup catcher, but again, having a semi-competent bat off the bench that is a catcher as well, and not just your emergency dude behind the dish that you're pretty much never deploying as a pinch hitter. That's just not really a very good value there for the Marlins, and I'll talk about that until I turn blue in the face because it's just so ridiculous to have to watch. I will say, though, that I've really enjoyed what we've seen from Jesus Sanchez, and while the numbers might not totally show it yet, he is looking much more competitive and polished at the plate. I've liked the at-bats we've seen. Sure, he's going to take those swings where you look at him and you're like, eh, what are you doing there? Why are you expanding the zone? Why are you swinging at that pitch? But I would say overall, he has been much better with the plate discipline, much better with the approach, and much better with the pitch selection. And that is all really good stuff. And I think it's translating into him picking up more hits, him putting together better at-bats. And the fact that he's walked five times in his last 45 at-bats is great. I know that's not the highest walk rate in the world, but it's actually pretty respectable. And given that he was a dude that was never walking initially in his debut in the big leagues and also didn't walk a ton in the minors, this is a good development. The strikeouts have been kept in check pretty well too. He's not punching out that much. He is hitting a lot of ground balls still. I think he's right at about a 57% rate on the ground balls. That can't happen. He's very steep to the baseball. His bat path is very steep, and he's still able to hit bombs. But if he could get a bit more efficient with the path and also just not so steep, sometimes he is a little bit dominant with that top hand, and that's why you're seeing pitchers go hard inside. When you're a little too dominant with that top hand, you can see him cast his hands out a little bit sometimes. That's where you see the fastball get in on the fists and break his bat. He does break a lot of bats because that's where they're trying to go after him. They know that he can get a little bit long sometimes, and he can also get dominant with that top hand. And when you are steep to the ball as well, that's where you want to bust guys in. They're going to have a hard time getting extended in there, and that's been part of the problem for him. But he's still finding a way usually to spoil those pitches or to fight those pitches off, and then he's shown comfort going the other way, and I think that's a good sign as well. He hit a ball like 430-something feet already in this series. The power is undeniable. The path just needs to be a bit more efficient, and I'm really encouraged, though, overall. I think we've seen nothing but positives from Sanchez, and he's looking like a legitimate option long-term in this outfield, and he's only going to get better as he gets more comfortable out there. I think he's going to get more acclimated to how pitchers are going to attack him. It's already clear how they're going to do that and how they're trying to do that, and he's only going to get better and better there. I've been very happy with the improvements in terms of his approach. I'm going to talk about the Sixto Sanchez injury as well as Zach McCambley's call-up. I'm going to get to see Jake Eater in the Futures game as I head out to Denver pretty soon, so excited for that as well. And then also a little bit on the timeline of Eddie Cabrera, who has just dazzled since coming back from injury. All of that coming up in just a moment. A reminder that this episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans, and you can download the app. It's free for all iOS devices. You can talk with me and other fans, athletes, insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. You can find Green Room, again, at the App Store for all iOS devices, the perfect place to start those conversations about the league, and you'll find fans just like you. Go download the free Green Room app now, and you can go sign up, make the profile, link your Twitter, join the MLB group for the latest league updates. You can follow me at RMLayton8 to be notified when my room goes live and join in. Download the Green Room app today. Green Room, changing the way we talk about sports. Also brought to you by, you guessed it, Built Bar, who has 9 delicious flavors and the new limited time flavor, which is the Built Grasshopper Cookie. And it doesn't have grasshoppers in it, don't worry, but it is a mint, almost Girl Scout cookie type of flavor to it that is just like all the other flavors, which means it's low in calories, low in sugar, low in carbs, low in fat, high in protein. What else could you want from a protein bar? You also got coconut, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, and German chocolate. And if you go to built.com right now and use a promo code LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15, you'll get 15% off your next order. That's built.com, promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, for 15% off your next order. So let's talk about first this Sixto Sanchez injury, because I had wanted to talk about it in the previous episode and I didn't get a chance to really go in depth because there was about a million things I wanted to talk about in the last episode, and including the Marlins lowballing starring Marte. So we'll see how those conversations continue. But the Sixto Sanchez injury, honestly, not shocking to me that he is going down for the year. I really didn't think we would see him at any point this year. I had routinely said that Edward Cabrera would beat him to not only the minor leagues, but to the big leagues. I know Sixto's already been there, but the return to the big leagues. And Eddie Cabrera, in my opinion, especially at this point too, I mean, if Sixto is 100% healthy and doesn't have some of the concerns about his work ethic, then maybe it's a different story. But I really think that at this point, Edward Cabrera is the better pitching prospect from what I've seen from him as of late. And that's not as much to knock Sixto, but it's a little bit to knock Sixto and a lot to just promote what Eddie Cabrera has done. He has been spectacular. And there has long been that narrative that when people wanted to talk about Edward Cabrera, it seemed like the first thing that someone would say, whether it was a Marlins writer, analyst, Marlins fan, or even a prospect analyst, a national writer, it would always be, some teams like Edward Cabrera more than Sixto Sanchez, just as like the, yeah, he's that good type of thing. And as if it was like this, whoa, he's better than Sixto. Now I don't even think it's that crazy because one, he gets way more swing and miss. He's got a more easy and smooth delivery and the command. I know Sixto throws strikes, but that's control. The command on Edward Cabrera is spectacular. I've been so impressed by the ability to locate. The changeup is special. The slider looks great. And the fastball is electric. And look at his numbers right now through AA. And you don't have to look at it because you're probably driving a car or walking or doing something and you just got your headphones in. So I'm going to tell you what the numbers are. He's had 4 starts, 20 and a third innings. He has only surrendered 14 hits, a 1.77 ERA, 26 Ks against just 5 walks in AA. He has been wonderful, and I could also add in the 6 innings of his first rehab start in A-ball where he just bullied kids and went 6 innings, 11 Ks, and no walks, and was just unhittable. I guess technically hittable. He gave up 4 hits, but they were just scattered singles. He has been magnificent, magnificent. And the thing is to see him back healthy and really having that velocity, the command, all those things looking good, and really the biceps injury kind of behind him, that is good to see. Hopefully he can stay healthy. I think the fact that he's 6'5 and has those clean mechanics, that all works in his favor. The fact that he's 6'5, 217, and Sixto is 6', and I think he's really 5'11, 235 to 240 pounds, that's two very starkly different builds. And that's not to say that you can't be that kind of build and not be successful. There's plenty of pitchers that have done just that and been successful. But you might remember that Sixto's debut in 2020 was a bit delayed as well because he showed up to camp and was not in the best shape. He was not looking good, and the Marlins were not happy about it. And Sixto said it was a quote-unquote wake-up call for him. I don't really believe that. And the fact that he had to say something like that, like, oh, this was a wake-up call for me, that I had to start like working hard now and getting in shape. You need a wake-up call at that point. You're knocking on the door in the big leagues, and you need a wake-up call that you need to be in good shape to play Major League Baseball at this level, at this point, with the way the game is trending. That has me concerned about what the other aspects of his work ethic look like, what the other aspects of his arm care and those components look like as well. That's something that is very important. You look at Major League pitchers, they do every single possible thing to preserve their health, and sometimes that's not even enough. It's still not even enough for a lot of guys. The apparent injury on Sixto was a partial tear in his posterior capsule, which in other terms, in not crazy doctor terms, it's just a partial tear in an area part of adjacent to your rotator cuff. And the way the Marlins decided to approach this was that they said, hey, why don't you try and rehab it? That was the doctor's take as well. See if you can get back and then see how it goes. And if it was the labrum, I'd be like, what are you doing? And when I saw the report came out after that he was out for the season, but that the Marlins knew about the tear and were trying to rehab him back, and that's why they were being so murky and dark and quiet about it, that makes sense. But the rotator can actually heal through rehab. That's something that you can actually get back and avoid surgery with, especially if it's a partial tear. So I understand the rationale there, but you have to work really, really hard to avoid surgery on a rotator cuff. You have to do so many things because the posterior capsule tightens up on you big time. And this is something that I dealt with the posterior capsule, and I think it led to the labrum tear. So it is good that it didn't lead to anything more severe and that it didn't lead to a slap tear, as they call it, which would be like the top to the bottom of his labrum, and that they're taking care of the issue now before it snowballed into anything that could be permanently damaging. I don't think that this is going to be something that you can't really recover from. I know I always talk about how shoulders are terrifying, and they are really, really scary. But he's avoiding that severe damage that the shoulder is not quite going to feel the same. I think that the fact that they caught it early and decided to go with the surgery route here was the right move instead of trying to rehab it consecutively and hoping, especially because I don't have a lot of faith in Sixto Sanchez being able to consistently rehab at the level that he needs to avoid a surgery when we're talking about a rotator and the posterior capsule. Generally, to keep that capsule healthy and loose, you have to stretch a ton, a lot of armbands, a lot of those things. And let's just say Sixto is maybe not known for being the hardest worker and doing all of those things quite frequently. And that's all I'll say on that topic. But I hope that he comes back healthy. Hopefully this will be the wake-up call for him. And the good news is that I'm not overly alarmed about this to a degree of if it was a labrum slap tear or if this was a severe rotator cuff tear. It's kind of on the fringes there. So he should be fine. The thing is that heading into last year even, there were things that I liked about Edward Cabrera more than Sixto. Sixto's swinging strike percentage was alarmingly low even in the minor leagues, and we've seen why. I've talked about it a lot in the past about how his pitch usage doesn't foster or doesn't cater to getting swings and misses oftentimes because the changeup and the sinker overlap, don't have enough separation from each other, and the breaking ball, the slider, was not really a reliable pitch for him, and the fastball, he missed his locations a lot. And I look at a guy like Edward Cabrera, and his pitches all complement each other a lot better. You talk about tunneling and all of those things and how important that is. The fastball works off of the changeup well. The slider is nasty, and all three pitches complement each other in the way he's able to locate them. That was something that Sixto was going to have to iron out anyways to reach that ceiling, and it's still going to be something that he has to iron out. I think even health aside, Edward Cabrera is going to have a better chance at being able to get those consistent swings and misses. And while he might not quite get the degree of ground balls that a guy like Sixto gets because of the heavy sink, there's still some sinking action to Edward's stuff, and he's been getting a lot of ground balls, actually as many ground balls as he has in his minor league career in AA right now, getting a 48% ground ball clip right now for him this season with the Blue Wahoos. So I've been really impressed with Eddie. I hope that the Marlins call him up at some point this year. I know that they're going to want to manage his workload to a degree, and that's just fine, but I would love to see this guy at the big league level, and imagine the boost that he would give to this team right now. And that rotation, there'd never be a day off for somebody facing the team. It would just be ridiculous top to bottom as they were going with three men for so long. Now you have Zach Thompson, who's emerged and been a legitimate dude. If he can sustain that, then you slide in someone like Edward Cabrera, who has front end potential. This is just dumb. It's just dumb how much talent they have pitching wise, and it's fun. And when you have the Zach Thompsons and the Jake Eaters of the world that are developing the way they are, Jake Eater's going to be a top 100 prospect. Zach Thompson's having success in the big leagues. Cody Poteet's even shown flashes of being a potential 4 or 5 starter. I'm looking for the Marlins to trade from this surplus of pitching. And Kim Ng has said we're looking for moves to make for now and for the future. Regardless of what the Marlins situation is, you got to start looking to trade from that surplus of pitching. And it's going to be interesting to see how they decide to navigate that. I think especially the fact that Edward is back healthy and pitching well on top of Meyer really looking good. McCambly looking really good and getting the promotion to AA. The dominance of Trevor Rogers. You can confidently part with a little bit of pitching and still feel great. And I think you got to start looking at offensive options for you that could slot into potentially the outfield, that could slot into the infield, and can help you maybe now or have a close timeline to being big league ready and some of the more high floor guys. But it should be fun. And I think you have to be more comfortable trading from that as well when you know that you have the 16th and the 31st pick in this year's draft. Speaking of young pitchers' performances, how about Jordan Holloway in that game against the Dodgers, the walk-off? It was Game 3 of the series that the Marlins ultimately walked off, but they wouldn't have had a shot. They wouldn't have had a prayer in that game if it weren't for Jordan Holloway. And it was initially a Ross Detweiler start, and Detweiler was able to get through 2 innings. And at that point, I was looking at Detweiler and I was saying, okay, good job, get out of there and go to somebody else. And that was where they should have went to Holloway. And this isn't hindsight. This was something that I was writing down to hold myself accountable. I was like, I'm putting this in my notes. If I'm wrong, I'll say I was wrong. If I'm right, I want to be able to say like this was something I had in mind before. Because the thing with Detweiler, and I don't know what in the world the Marlins were thinking here and what Don Mattingly was thinking. Look, I know the bullpen was taxed. I understand that. But the fact that they tried to stretch out Ross Detweiler to 60-plus pitches – he had not thrown more than 60 pitches since September of 2019. Not only is that reckless and dangerous for Ross Detweiler, a guy that's actually been really good in short spurts and has been solid, it's also just not a good idea because you're getting a guy out there who just looked visibly fatigued in the third inning, which understandably so. He doesn't do that anymore. He doesn't throw that much. You haven't done something like that since 2019. He goes in there more often than not and doesn't even throw a whole inning. That's his role. He gets lefties out. He's done a good job of it all year. I understand you had to stretch him out, and you did. You stretched him out to two innings. He hadn't really done that at all this year either. Maybe one other occasion, and he kept the pitch count down. To put him over 60 not only was dangerous for him, because the worst thing you can do, there's more damage done in 10 fatigued pitches than there are in 100 pitches where you're not fatigued. And that is another reason why I thought it was just a bad idea. And Eli Sussman even quote tweeted me on that from the Fish Stripes account and was saying the same thing. Like, this was not smart. He added the injury point, and I think it was a great point. I thought it was not smart from a winning standpoint. And Eli mentions the injury proponent of it, and it's also just ridiculous. And I just was shocked to see them do that, especially when you had Jordan Holloway, because Holloway is capable of doing that. And they were leaving Detweiler out there to get racked anyways. You were going to let whoever was out there struggle and try and get through it. And Holloway's that guy. He can do that. He's going to pitch to contact enough. Yes, he walks dudes, but overall, he's going to throw the fastball if he has to. And if they hit it around, they hit it around. Well, anyways, he was great. He was great. And of course, that just makes my point a little bit stronger. And I'm not saying it because he was great. If he got shelled but gave the Marlins four innings, that would have been just fine too. Holloway ends up going 4 1/3 for the Marlins, gives up 2 hits, no runs, strikes out 6. I'd argue it was the best outing of his major league career. Really, it was that impressive. And the reason why was because he was actually able to mix it up beyond just the fastball and the slider. He was able to mix in some pitches, and I'll get to that in a second. But the other really funny thing about this is he still threw 4 less pitches than Ross Detweiler. So Ross Detweiler goes 2 2/3, excuse me, and throws 64 pitches. Jordan Holloway goes 4 1/3 and throws 60 pitches. So not only does Holloway give you twice as much in terms of innings, he also throws less pitches. So you stretch out Detweiler without probably going to Holloway, which would have been the better idea there, without a doubt in my mind. And that's from an injury perspective and from a winning perspective, blew my mind. But let's talk about Holloway, because again, that 4 1/3, 6 Ks, no runs, like, that's some great stuff. And he saved the Marlins. The Marlins don't win that game without Holloway. And I don't even know how they pieced together just to even get enough guys to throw pitches in the final game of the series without Holloway. He really gave that bullpen a reprieve. But what really impressed me was the amount of confidence he had in multiple pitches. Sure, he went slider heavy. He threw it 48% of the time, and it was wonderful. He racked up 5 whiffs on the slider, as well as 9 called strikes. And called strike whiffs is always something I'm going to cite, because whiffs are great too, but if you can get them to take a strike without even swinging at it, that's even better. Whether it's because you fooled them or you got them taken, that's great. And called strike whiff percentage is one of the biggest things, one of the most important things. And he turned up a 40% called strike whiff rate, which is well above average. And that's because he goes to the slider 48% of the time, the fastball 23% of the time, then through the knuckle curve 13% of the time, which was great. It was just enough to keep the hitters off balance, give them a different look. Goes to a sinker 12% of the time as well, which was a different perspective also. And then even threw in a pair of changeups, which he was just experimenting with, and it was just good to see him throw it, and he got a called strike on it even. So that was a good outing all by all accounts, because he went to his best pitch and dominated with it, but he also was comfortable with the fastball, was able to pile up 3 whiffs there and pile up 5 called strike whiffs on the fastball, then also got some swings and misses on the knuckle curve and was able to get some ground balls on the sinker. All in all, a fantastic start. I was so happy to see him have some confidence in that knuckle curve as a third pitch as well. It's a good vertical breaking pitch off of the four-seamer and the slider, and makes it much more palatable that he doesn't have a reliable changeup at this point, because the knuckle curve can still achieve what he would want to achieve with that changeup and that more vertical breaking, different speed, third distinctive speed that he needed. So great start, or great outing, excuse me, from Holloway, and really encouraging from the Marlins. I also love to see Anthony Bender. Yes, he gave up the home run Everybody's human. One pitch, one mistake. Major leaguers oftentimes are going to make you pay for it. But the short memory to come right back and set down the next hitters and close the door and give the Marlins a chance to win it in the bottom half is exactly what you want out of a closer. And to go to anybody else at this point in the closer role is outrageous. Oh, also, I have to mention it, right? The Marlins are bringing back Don Mattingly next year. I'm cool with it. Don Mattingly has dealt with so much losing, and I'm not a huge fan of Don Mattingly's managerial decisions and his game management. I think it's pretty bad, as I just talked about for a while, but there is a lot more that goes into it, right? And he has built a culture there of players that really like playing for him, of players that play hard, and turnover is just not the best thing right now. And I don't think that it would be good for this team, which has a lot of young players that are used to Mattingly, to just have this new turnaround when you're trying to win next year. I know that you'd probably want somebody a little bit more effective at the helm and that could make some better decisions. But at the end of the day, if you have a talented ball club and you're doing all of the things that you need to do from top to bottom, Mattingly's not going to impede you from winning, especially if the Marlins can probably keep him in check a little bit from top to bottom. I'm sure that they're going to talk about some of the managerial decisions, some of the willingness to leave guys out for too long, and maybe they hold him accountable in that regard. But they both pick up the mutual option. We'll get one more year of Don, excuse me, and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, the managerial decisions in game can be frustrating, but he is a great guy, a player that keeps the clubhouse together, keeps them afloat when they're struggling. And I think the way they bounce back to win 3 out of 4 against the Dodgers after a heart soul-crushing loss against the Braves to close out that series is an example of how Don Mattingly is able to keep the spirits up and able to keep the clubhouse intact, which is still the most important thing to me for a manager. So that'll do it for today's episode. I'll have more for you tomorrow. I'll actually be going out to South Bend to catch the Beloit Snappers playing the South Bend Cubbies. And then from there, I'm heading out to Denver. So a lot of traveling on the way, but I'll do some mobile episodes to go watch the Futures game, to have some live coverage on the All-Star weekend and the draft from there as well. I'm going to talk about who the Marlins could be drafting in tomorrow's episode, but I just did a full first round mock draft, or at least part one. Part two of the rest of the mock draft is coming out on Locked On MLB Prospects tomorrow, but the full first round mock draft is also live at justbaseball.com, and I think you'll like who I have the Marlins taking there. Hopefully he falls to them, but that mock draft will be out by the time you're listening to this on the morning of Friday at justbaseball.com to see the full first round mock draft. Also, really exciting development you may have seen on Twitter, but I'll be hosting a twice per week podcast as well with Jeff Conine, who is justbaseball.com's MLB advisor and now the co-host of Outside the Box with Jeff Conine. It's available on Spotify and just about every single other podcasting app, probably a day or two from getting approved on Apple, but already 2 episodes out. Some really fun stuff that it's going to be so fun to just be able to pick his brain and talk to him about everything in the baseball world and everything from his stories that he has to, I mean, last episode we talked about him going to Tokyo to sign Ichiro and just those kinds of stories that are so amazing. Cal Ripken, Ozzie Smith was the topic of the last episode, just stuff that you just can't get anywhere else. And it's been so fun for me to be able to do that show twice a week on top of this also. So check that out, Outside the Box with Jeff Conine. It's on Spotify, should be on Apple soon as well. I will have my full Marlins draft preview for tomorrow's episode and talk about where I think they're going to go in the first round and beyond that. Remember, they also pick at 31, so they'll be able to get someone really talented there also. And I have a lot of faith in them being able to draft in the later rounds, as they've been able to show. So I'll have a fun full preview of what the Marlins can do in this upcoming draft, and I'll be live from the draft with coverage there as well. Thank you for listening as always, and I look forward to talking Marlins draft with you tomorrow.